ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जाय मुदीरयेत् नष्ट प्राप्त। Since the Vaishnavas celebrate Mahashivaratri today, I have been instructed to speak a little bit about the glories of Lord Shiva. So, instead of the usual verse, we'll try to discuss some of Lord Shiva's glories today. Devotees of Lord Shiva and devotees of Lord Vishnu almost seem to be divided like two political parties in India. It's a question of allegiance to a particular flag or allegiance to a particular group, and so much of egotism involved in proclaiming the glories of a particular group that it certainly betrays a lack of proper understanding. So, in the Brahma Samhita, explanation given by His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he describes Lord Shiva and Lord and Mother Parvati as the main personalities of this material world. Shiva is a symbol of the male procreatory principle. So what exactly is Lord Shiva, or who is this person? In the later verses of Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma himself describes Kshiram yatha dadhi vikar vishesha yogat. Kshiram is milk. And milk, when it has a vikar, it has a culture, some change in it, that milk is seen as curd or yogurt. Sanjayate nahi tatha prithag asti heto yah shambhutam api upaiti samupaiti karyat govinda madhi purusham tamaham bhajami. For a particular kind of purpose, for a very special service, Lord Vishnu, who can be compared to the milk here, he accepts a particular kind of change in him. And that tattva, that personality, that personification of that process is called Shiva. So in that sense, there is no difference between Shiva and Vishnu. And from one point of view, there is. Because Lord Shiva is very intimately connected with affairs of this material world, he almost seems to be one among the many personalities found here. Jiva Goswami explains in his Sandarbhas that just like there are different degrees of ghee lamps, degrees in the sense, if a lamp has a flame which is not purely blue, if you see a yellowish flame emits a lot of soot, kajjalmayi, that's what he describes. So Vishnu can be compared to that flame which doesn't emit any soot, any black smoke. And Shiva is like that. So are all these blemishes on his personality? Are all these considered to be faults in him? No, they are not considered faults. So Shiva is considered a special tattva. There is Vishnu tattva, or the predominators. There is Shakti tattva, that is the Lord's potencies. Then there is a Jiva tattva, the Lord's expansion, who are not his own plenary portions, who are Vibhinnamsha, who are his separated amshas, separated part and parcels. And another separate tattva is the Shiva tattva, who is neither Jiva nor Vishnu, and has his own particular ways of functioning. In fact, the Vaishnava Acharyas have even calculated that there are total of, say, 50 qualities, 50 different kinds of attributes which a living entity may try to possess. Lord Brahma, who most probably is a Jiva soul most of the time, he represents the full manifestation of these 50 qualities according to the level a Jiva might reach. Not full in toto, full according to his capacity. Like when we say this glass is full of sea water, doesn't mean the whole sea is inside. That glass has its own capacity, till that it is full. So Brahma can have 50 qualities. Shiva can have 5 more. Vishnu has 5 more, which even Brahma and Shiva can never have. And of course, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exhibits 4 other very special qualities: Rupa Madhuri, Venu Madhuri, Lila Madhuri, and Prema Madhuri. And these even other personalities, or nobody can exhibit them. So Lord Shiva exhibits something like 84%. Of course, in one way this percentage has very less relevance. But Prabhupada explains about Lord Shiva's activities as he awards gifts to beggars, mainly living entities who may go under very big titles in this material world, but they are actually beggars. Like the most efficient beggar may be a very rich person. So the conditioned soul wants to fulfill his desires, and he needs someone to do it, like an agent. And therefore, surrendering to Lord Shiva primarily means getting the job done, getting your work done. I remember one person had come to our temple, and I had asked him that, "You come to our Sunday program?" So he said, "Well, to tell the truth, I visit only Babulnath temple. But today I had come here. I don't know why I walked in this compound. But normally I don't come here." I said, "Why? It's a nice temple, Radha Krishna temple. There are nice devotees, nice programs." He said, "But Babulnath is my main worshipable deity." I said, "Fine." Then he said, "Wo kaam karta hai." He does exactly what I ask of him. So I said, "But Lord Krishna or Vishnu is also described as one who fulfills all your wishes." He said, "Nahi, his name is Hari. He takes away everything what you have." And Lord Shiva is known as Ashutosh. Ashu means very quickly. Tosha, Santosh, one who gets very, very pleased very easily. Now, why should Krishna have a manifestation which gets very pleased very easily. That is his compassion upon the conditioned souls. In fact, the process is like this. By getting benediction and not knowing how to use them, inevitably somebody becomes proud. And that person becomes so proud, and pride is generally shown before weak people. So proud devotees of Lord Shiva, they show their pride before so-called weak Vaishnavas. They feel that these guys have no money, no power, no fame. And then they try to offend the devotees of Lord Vishnu. And then Vishnu has to personally kill them. And thus he awards them liberation. So it's a very long-winding process for devotees of Lord Shiva. In fact, one devotee had mentioned that Lord Shiva also has a garland of skulls around his neck. And none of these are devotees of Vishnu. They are all his devotees. Now what kind of benediction is this, that you have to wear your own devotees' skulls? Once on a morning walk, some devotees asked Prabhupada that Ravan is celebrated as a devotee of Lord Shiva. Ravana wanted to get benediction. So he did big tapasya and he actually worshipped Lord Shiva with such pomp and such sort of celebration that Lord Shiva finally said, "What do you want?" And then he asked him all the various benedictions which he wanted. And ultimately he said he wanted to enjoy Mother Parvati. So Lord Shiva could understand what a rascal this fellow is. He has no sense of even decency. So when the war began, it may be a misconception, but at least it is there in South India, that Lord Ram worshipped a Shiva Linga. And he said to Lord Shiva that, "Please give me permission to kill this devotee of yours." So that's how they say, see, this proves that Shiva actually is a more powerful personality than Lord Ram. So when Prabhupada heard this, he became very amused. It's in the tape. If you can want, you can listen. Prabhupada said, "So, what kind of rascal is this Lord Shiva that he is giving permission to someone to kill his own devotee?" So he says, "Then why should I worship Lord Shiva? I worship him for something, and when the big decisive moment comes, he gives permission to my enemy to kill me." He said, "This is certainly not true, and this shows how foolish some people are." So the overwhelming quality of Lord Shiva's personality is his compassion and his friendliness towards devotees of Lord Vishnu. These two things are the hallmark of his personality. He is very much compassionate. In fact, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it is described that sometimes he feels, "Oh, I don't know why I am so compassionate. I don't know why somebody comes before me and I just give him that benediction, not knowing fully well the consequences of that." Like this demon Vrikasur, he was putting parts of his own flesh in the sacrificial fire and worshipping Lord Shiva with that. "May Shiva be pleased, may Shiva be pleased." So Shiva came before him and he said, "Stop! What kind of a sacrifice is this? Did I tell you to do like something like this?" He said, "No, I did this because you'll be very attracted if I do something like this. You'll be convinced as to how much I love you." So he said, "What do you want?" "I want a small benediction from you, that if I place my hand on whoever's head, let his head crack to pieces." So Lord Shiva is saying, all these people coming on my way, I don't know why I have to deal with these people. But because of that nature, he feels that, let him get that. And the moment he gets that benediction, he says, stop my Lord, I want to see whether what you have given to me is true or not. He said, of course. Do you doubt me? Why should I give anybody any false benediction? No, let me check it by putting my hand on your head. Now this shows that there was no faith right from the beginning. And seeing his position in such a, like seeing Lord Shiva in such a confusing, puzzling situation, Vishnu himself comes in the garb of a brahmachari. And he asks the person, this Vrikasura, whom are you pursuing? He said, it's Lord Shiva. And he says, may I ask why? He said, he gave me this benediction that whoever's head I place my hand, that head will crack into pieces. So he says, well, you know, you can't trust him all the time. He said, what do you mean? He said, yes, I have seen. It's not that whatever he says is always happens like that. I have a better idea. All you want to do is to check whether this benediction is true or not, right? You have your own head. I am assuring you, nothing will happen. So, completely confused by Lord Shiva's mystic potency, Vrikasura puts his hand on his own head and his own head cracks into so many pieces. And then Lord Shiva comes and says, oh, I am so sorry. I had to give this benediction to him. So, Vishnu exhorts him, don't let these rascals misuse you. Although he may say so, the moment he sees somebody worshipping him, he knows as he's also called Bhutanath. Bhut doesn't mean only ghosts and demons. Bhut also means all living entities. So he has charge over all the conditioned souls here. And one of the preliminary levels of understanding transcendence is when you start worshipping Lord Shiva. What is the meaning of worship for a, you can say, ill-educated or a illiterate person from the spiritual point of view? It is explained by Prabhupada that even pygmies, aboriginal people, adivasis, jungly people as we call them, they also go and worship before a big tree or a big mountain peak or a big river. Whatever is seen as something very huge, something which is very strange. Like most of the tribals all over the world, they have lions, tigers, elephants as their worshipable animals. Banyan trees, oak trees as their worshipable trees. Or mountain peaks. Like the tribals of the Himalayas, they worship Mount Everest. In Africa, they worship Kilimanjaro. All these show that something if I cannot conquer, or something which can always conquer me, something which always is troublesome for me, that I have to bow down my head before that. There is no question of not doing that. At the same time, if something is so very important for my survival, I have to depend on it. Like a tree which gives perennial shade, leaves, fruits, flowers, there is also the tendency to respect that. So similarly, since Lord Shiva, he is in charge of giving all these benedictions, which a conditioned soul feels are very necessary for his survival, he feels if I serve him more, I'll get more. If I serve him more, I'll get more. And therefore, there is this insistence. But that service cannot be called service. That worship cannot be called worship. because there is no understanding of higher spiritual truths. This is very much brought to the fore or very readily understandable when the demigods and demons were trying to churn the milk ocean. This is a very nice passage in Srimad Bhagavatam where the efforts of demigods and demons both for conquering material nature is seen in a very nice light. Of course, most of the demigods are also mixed devotees. They equally have a similar desire for enjoying this material world, but they want to do it legally. Like people who want to drink, but they want to take government's permission and drink. So there is something called a permit room. Of course, it's all a farce nowadays. But technically the idea is, if you are legal age and you are sober enough to understand what you are doing, then we'll give you a little bit permission to indulge in. So demigods are like that. And those who have their own home brew, they are the asuras who want to do it hell or high water. That whether there's a government stricture or not, whether the proper things are available or not. Like it was said that when under one Russian prime minister or general secretary, when vodka was rationed in Russia, the Russian army men, soldiers, they found how to make something from the tank fuel. They were making liquor from that. So they were prepared not to run their tanks, but they were not prepared to give up that liquor. So that's how enterprising and innovative someone can be, just in order to have his own sense gratification. So it so happens that the demigods actually lose a fight with the demons. And that really surprises them. That how come we lost? So Lord Vishnu tries to console them. And the gist of his understanding is that just because you are demigods doesn't mean you'll always win. Where is the guarantee that because you are a demigod, you'll always win? They say, no, but we are supposed to be the people who run affairs here, and we are the ones who run the whole show. So even Lord Vishnu desires that they should be sometimes given a hint as to what, who really is in charge here. So when the demigods actually lose the fight, the asuras, they are always like the underdogs. They are always number two. They always want to win. And they always try to using various other means. But this time, they actually do it. They kick out all these various demigods from their various posts and put their asuras in charge. Like it is strange to see all these asuras on their various weird kind of creatures. Someone coming on lions, tigers, all kinds of hideous creatures. And suddenly now in official capacity as the god of wind, the god of rain. And that actually happened. So when Lord Vishnu came to have a meeting with the demigods, they expected him to immediately press some button and unseat all the demons there. He says that's not going to happen. So they are already bereft of their titles, some of them even their dress. Some of them, even their ornaments, their titular swords, and all the things which they used to glorify themselves with, they've all gone, bereft of all fortune. And Vishnu says, I think time is against you. They're saying, what kind of answer is this? Time is against us. So what are you supposed to do? And Vishnu, of all people, tells them, have a truce with them. Shake hands. They say, that's very difficult. He say, no, sometimes you do it. This is diplomacy. You lost the war. Now if you don't have a truce with them, they'll come and kill you. So that idea appeals to the demons also. They are also not very eager to fight. They want to enjoy. Now they've got it. And then the demigods are exhorted by Lord Vishnu to tell them that, now in order to actually enjoy this material world, what we need is nectar, which will make our body strong. If the body is strong, that means the senses are strong. If the senses are strong, then your strong material desires could actually be put into practice. Now this appeals to both parties. It's not that the demigods are saying, no, we don't want any material desires. They also immediately equally happy with that. And the demigods are given the charge of organizing this whole process. So the demigods think that we will start churning. When the nectar comes, we'll run away with it. And the demons are in the process for exactly the same purpose. That when we churn, we'll get some nectar and then we will run away with it. Now just see, it is just like two political parties coming together for a common platform when both of them have no desire to actually cooperate. So right from the beginning, this whole episode has many, you can say, guest appearances of avatars. In fact, the most. Who will churn it? These two parties. How will they churn it? They should need a churning rod. So, Mandar Parvat is chosen, that this will be our churning rod. Who will be the churning rope? Vasuki, the king of snakes. He is told, please, you should do this. And he says, okay, no problem. As they are about to go to the foothills of Mount Mandar and bring it, they find that they can't lift it. All of them, all the demigods, all the demons together, they lift it somehow. It's a heavy peak made of solid gold. Somehow they have all raised it above their heads. It comes crashing down all of them. They're all trapped. And of course, some are thinking, why we agreed for this thing in the first place? All our backs are broken. Then Lord Vishnu comes on his Garuda. With his one hand, he lifts the whole thing up. With a glance, revives all of their bodies. Places it on the back of Garuda. And he says, meet me there. We'll all go there. So then even the demons are agreed that he seems to be a different person. He always is with the demigods and we confuse him as one of them, but he's not actually. Then they put Mount Mandar near the ocean, near the milk ocean. Vasuki is tied up there. Then they start churning, and before even the whole thing could begin, some demons have this idea that there is some strange politics going on here. We are the victors. We won the whole battle. And look, who is holding the tail? The asuras. And who is holding the mouth? The demigods. Why they gave us this back part of the body, which is very inauspicious? So they say, stop. And the demigods say, now what? We can't have this kind of shameful treatment given for us. You catch the tail because you lost. And they have to admit every time, they have to be reminded that you lost. They said, okay, fine. They appeal to Lord Vishnu. But he says, just take it, everything as it comes. Sometimes to a devotee, Lord Krishna's advice is, just take life as it comes. Everything has its purpose. Even a temporary defeat has its purpose. And then when they start churning, Mount Mandar slips and goes to the bottom of the ocean. And they are only left with the rope in their hand. And they say, what do we do now? And then they find a giant tortoise coming up. Lord Kashyapa. A giant tortoise comes up, places Lord Mandar on its, places it properly on its back. But it is not balanced from the top. So one another avatar of Lord Vishnu, Lord Ajita, with thousands of arms, sits on the top of the peak. So it is the Lord who brought the whole thing there. He is balancing from the top. He is balancing from the bottom. He is telling him how to do it. And when they vigorously start churning it, Vasuki is so agitated. He's a king of serpents. That fumes start coming from his mouth. Smoke, fumes, flames. And all the asuras, their bodies are blackened by it. But now, they can't say that we want to go back. They only chose his option. So, somehow, tolerating everything. And then one by one, they see that some things are beginning to come. So there is a Uchai Shrava, a celestial horse, Airavata. And as they are waiting for the real thing to come up, suddenly this big, thick, black Kalakuta poison comes. Now just see, after all this endeavor, this is just the opposite of what they are doing. If instead of nectar, some diluted nectar comes, that's a different thing. Or something else comes, which is not nectar, but which is edible. It's a different thing. This is exactly the opposite. This is what Prahlad Maharaj tells his friends, that this material world is such a place that not most of the time, not almost all the time, but every time someone begins an endeavor in this material world, which is not conducive for devotional service, you get just the opposite. They want nectar, they get poison. And that poison is so powerful that it can kill the whole universe practically. So that time, Lord Vishnu, he encourages them, you go and take shelter of Lord Shiva. Now he can do it himself. He showed what he did so many times before. But Lord Vishnu also wants that those particular kind of people, their faith in Shiva should not be broken. Faith is a very, very delicate thing. It can be substituted from here to there immediately. Sometimes for someone with a very, very heavy, thick sense gratificationary attitude, someone like Lord Shiva at least becomes like a ray of last hope. Someone who can actually take care of him. So Lord Shiva, when he sees the whole situation, he tells Bhavani, now I am going to drink this whole poison. Because there can be no antidote, there can be no agent which can counteract it. I can't put it anywhere. And this is where his compassion glows like anything. Who can take care of some such a difficult object, impossible object rather, and not just bury it somewhere, or not just bury it or put it in the space somewhere, but he says, I will ingest it. And with his mighty powers, he compresses that whole ocean into something which can be held in the palm of his hand and actually starts drinking it. It is so powerful that his whole throat becomes black and blue. But even that is glorified. Devotees call him Neelakantha. And as he is about to finish off the job, some drops fall on the ground. And there are some entities just waiting for that. So there are scorpions, venomous serpents, reptiles, and all those who we fear as being poisonous are the ones who tasted that some drop falling from that Kalakuta. Now there are vipers who can kill somebody with a bite. Like we find sometimes cattle die because of snake poison, men die because of poison. One man dies because of a gram of poison, and how much poisonous that Kalakuta ocean must be. And how powerful Lord Shiva actually is to drink it wholesale, completely. So this he did just for the sake of that encouragement given by Lord Vishnu. (Clears throat) So that is his compassion. And secondly is his love for the devotees of Vishnu. That is seen when he encourages the Prachetas, who are princes, about to take over the administration. And without anybody telling him, Lord Shiva goes and teaches them a very unique prayer, a mantra, to satisfy Lord Vishnu. So it is said that if anyone is worshipping Lord Shiva, if he even once prays to him, give me something that you will like to give. All the time I am asking you, that give me something which I like. But once, if you pray to him, give me something which is your heart's inner desire, you will be pleased. Just see where Lord Shiva will bring that person to. It's a fact. The Bhagavatam says, Shiva Virinchi Nutam. Lord Vishnu is worshipped by both Shiva, that is Lord Shiva, and Virinchi, that is Lord Brahma. In the life of Lord Chaitanya, both these personalities came. Lord Brahma came as Brahma Haridas, the Namacharya. And Lord Shiva, he appeared in the person of Advaita Acharya. So here we have, in fact, the Jagannath temple, at least to my mind, I have seen that temple only, perhaps it may be in some other temples, where actually on the doorway of the main entrance of the temple, you have Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva attending as doorkeepers of Lord Jagannath. So there is no doubt that Lord Shiva loves the devotees of Lord Vishnu. And anyone criticizes Lord Shiva for any of his activities, Srila Prabhupada says in a purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that person is shameless. That means he doesn't know what this personality actually is doing. Now, we don't need to worship Lord Shiva for those same purposes. We don't need to accept the remnants of what they offer. In India, it's a whole ghastly thing what they offer Lord Shiva. In his form as Kal Bhairav is his assistant. Lord Shiva is called Mahakal Bhairav. In one temple in Madhya Pradesh, they offer him liquor. In some temple, they offer him abhishek of crematoria ash. Somebody is burned already, and that ash is poured on him. So the more the degraded, that kind of people are being under his custody. And that's why he appears like them. He is not dirty, but he tries to be like them, just so that they don't leave his company and go completely astray. There's a very funny anecdote about how unattached is he. Lord Shiva married Parvati. She is the full personification of this material energy. That means he owns this material energy. As the husband owns the wife, of course the wife also owns the husband in that same sense. So everybody comes and asks for some benediction. And as Mother Parvati is powerful, and Lord Shiva is very happy, they give. This is their wedding day. They have a grand house, a nice palace to stay. And one Brahmana particularly is very late. So almost everybody has gone, and now they are saying, okay, we have satisfied all the guests. But then Lord Shiva realizes that nothing is left now. All whatever he had given away. And when this last person comes and he says some benediction, today is such a happy day, you got married today. The Lord Shiva sees that this house is the only thing remaining, you take it. So the newlyweds are again outside. That is his nature. Completely guileless, completely without any duplicity. Now who will give away his own house as a wedding gift and again live in the street? He doesn't care for it. He actually is Bholenath. simple, but is not foolish. He knows, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he knows that Lord Vishnu knows my heart, and that is my solace. Even if the whole world gets confused as to why I do certain things, I know that Lord Vishnu knows my heart. So therefore, there are so many endless things about his glories, especially how he accepted Mother Ganga on his head, and he's dealing with Arjuna. So many pastimes are there where his nature and his personality comes shining forth. Suffice to say that we Vaishnavas also celebrate Shivratri sometimes. Prabhupada used the word sometimes in Krishna book. That sometimes they do, sometimes they do not. Like the Brajavasis, they did celebrate sometimes. In fact, Lord Shiva also has his presence in Vrindavan. He wanted to visit the Raslila. So he was told that, well, no males are allowed inside. There's only one male, Krishna. And he says, fine, I don't have any attachment for a particular form. All I want to see is serve this pastime. So he came as a gopi. It was a strange gopi. This gopi had a snake in her neck. And everybody got terrified. What is this? So this is the extent. There are four specific Shivas guarding the most esoteric places of pastimes in Vrindavan. There is Bhuteshwar Mahadev, Gopeshwar Mahadev, Kameshwar Mahadev, and Chakleshwar Mahadev. His dealings with Sanatan Goswami. Sanatan Goswami, he liked his company so much to serve Sanatan Goswami in his bhajan, in his writings. But Sanatan Goswami was a bit inconvenienced, we can mildly say, with the mosquitoes there. So he decided, I am not staying here now, I'll go somewhere else. And Lord Shiva said, hey, don't do that. Isn't it? These mosquitoes are troubling me. And immediately, a word or not an email, but something was sent to the demigod in charge of mosquitoes that no one is allowed here. Okay? Don't trouble my pure associate here, my pure master in one sense. He is the one who guided that poor Brahmana who somehow got influenced by the desire to have a Chintamani gem. You touch it, something becomes gold. Again you touch it, it becomes gold. So he said, if I tell him, he may not agree. He said, go to Sanatana Goswami. He will tell you. Sanatana Goswami says, you want a gem which will make everything into gold? Fine. As you leave this cottage, on the main road, on the side, there is a garbage depot, garbage can. You just find it somewhere there. So he goes there, finds it. As he's about to make a long list of what things he will make into gold, he said, but why this thing was put here? A Chintamani gem would be put under some 3-4 vaults with combination locks, and so many security guard around them. So he goes back, he says, Maharaj, one last question. He says, why, it doesn't work? So no, I will try it later. Why was it put in that garbage can there? He said, because ultimately that also will not make you happy. Something higher than that also you have? He said, yes. He says, what possibly can be higher? Gold is the most profitable thing. A Chintamani thing which can make anybody into gold, anything into gold, is the most lucrative thing. He said, throw it in the river, then I'll tell you. By now he has sufficient faith in Sanatana Goswami that this person looks very trustworthy. He says, what do I need this for? He throws it away. And he said, now sit down here and listen carefully. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So this mantra if you chant, you'll get much more benefit than even having millions of Chintamani jewels. Because ultimately what they give will be remaining here. This will make even what Chintamani cannot make into gold, that is your own mind, your own desires, your own false ego, your own personality, will enable you to participate in Lord Krishna's pastimes. that power this particular gem has. And of course, then he is happy. So, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Any additions? Corrections? Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Radha Gopinath ki, Tai Gaur Prema Anande Hariya.